My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Major General Patrick Brady. He is also the author of Dead Men Flying, Victory in Vietnam, The Legend of Dust Off, America's Battlefield Angels. General Brady is a recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor as well as the Distinguished Service Cross. If I spent the time listing all of the awards he's received as a result of his military service, we wouldn't have any time for a conversation. It's just a truly remarkable career that has been rewarded in a number of very deserving ways. But we want to talk to him about where things stand right now with veterans and the military, and also talk about the contents of his book, Dead Men Flying. In general, it's an honor to have you with us today, sir.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's start with the way that our troops are honored and thought of in a much different way than, of course, when you and your colleagues came home from Vietnam. What do you make of the difference between the generations?
Well, I think Vietnam had something to do with the treatment that we give our troops today. When we came back from Vietnam, of course, those who remember, we kind of came back with our tail between our legs. We were called baby killers, war criminals, and I would add that it wasn't the American people. It was the media and the elite in this country who treated us that way. The American people to this day, I think, appreciate that veteran and what he did. But I think America's a little bit ashamed of the way they treated us, and that has contributed to the way they treat the troops today with the reverence they deserve. And another factor, too, when we've gone to war since Vietnam, we've taken our brothers and sisters in the reserves with us. We didn't do that in Vietnam. And when you take them with you into combat, you take about 3,500 American communities with you. And when you start to demonize those guys, as they did try to do, the media, during Desert Storm, those communities will rise up and say, hey, you're not going to treat my sons and daughters like that. And so I attribute the citizen soldiers to the fact that we, and along with the shame they have for the way they treat the Vietnam veteran, to the way our veterans are treated today.
When you came home from Vietnam, as well as your colleagues, and saw that particular treatment, especially after all that you had sacrificed, and thousands, of course, never came home, what did that do to you upon your return, and how tough has that been for others who came back?
Well, you'll see that the Vietnam veteran, when he came back, he became a good citizen. And despite all the reports of drug abuse and stuff like that, not true. None of it was true. He was a good citizen. His performance and conduct was above the mean. Now, initially, when the guy came back, their suicide rate was pretty high. First, in the early years, may have had something to do with the treatment, but that went away. Now, today, we've got an incredible suicide rate, and that's a result, I think, of the way they're stressing those soldiers over there. So, but in any event, the great thing about the Vietnam War was the humanitarian effort that went on over there, something that the media never covered, something that I do cover in my book. And, of course, the tip of the spear in that was the dust-off pilots rescued some 1 million souls, men, women, children, enemy, friendly, a few scout dogs. If you were hurt, we were going to come and get you. And in the book, we talk about Charles Kelly, the father of Dustoff, how he gave his life, how his dying words, "When I have your wounded," set the standard to this day, pretty much to this day. They're still messing with it over in Afghanistan in terms of how quickly we responded to those who were hurt. And thanks to Dustoff, if you were shot in a jungle in Vietnam, your chances of survival were greater than if you were injured on a highway in America. It's remarkable, remarkable survival rates in that war. And as I said, the GI added to his heroism, humanitarianism, unseen in wars before. Previous wars, we just bombed and destroyed everything in our way, including civilians. In Vietnam, in the heat of the battle, he was still building medical facilities, vaccinating those kids, educating them, adopting them, and doing everything in every way to care for and care about those people. And in my trips back, I can see the kids have grown up. They appreciate it very much. They've treated me very, very well. They're wonderful people. And the kids I talk to over there, of all the countries in the world they'd rather visit, they'd like to visit, America's number one.
Talk a little bit more about how this was done logistically. I think you're right when you said a moment ago that most people aren't aware of the humanitarian mission there, or Dustoff in particular. I think the vast majority of people have no clue that that happened. So in addition to obviously helping our own troops who were wounded in the course of battle. You talk about all these civilians who are part of this as well. How did you prioritize that? How did you deal with enemy fire? Where did you take them? Just give our listeners a little bit of a flavor for that.
Well, that was the systems that we developed while we were over there. And as I said, Charles Kelly, it was a resource that had never been used like that in battle, the dust-off, the helicopter ambulance in Vietnam. And we developed techniques to get into the battlefield day or night in weather. In my case, my faith was a great help to me. The good Lord showed me the way to do it in the fog and in the weather and in different things. But we didn't prioritize. We, of course, our primary mission was Americans. That was why we were there. But if there were civilians hurt in our area, we had enough resources to take care of them as well. And to give you an idea of the workload, in one unit that I was in, the one I write about in the book, we had 40 men, small detachment. We had 6 birds, helicopters. At any one time, 3 of those would be flyable because of maintenance, and we had one shot up about every 4 or 5 days. 26 Purple Hearts. Of those 40 men, 26 of them were shot. Some of those are repetitions. But in a 9.5-month period, we carried over 21,000 patients. So you do the math, 3 aircraft. Now, there was 100 other dust-off aircraft in country doing the same thing. So we were able to provide those people with treatment and medical care that they'd never seen before. I would take these medical teams out into the jungles and the mountains, drop them in a village, dentists and doctors, surrounded by the enemy, and those young men would go out there and treat those villagers. And, you know, if somebody who's never seen a physician before, many of the ills that they had were very easily handled by our professionals. So they would see that expensive machine, and when Charles Kelly was flying, they called him Madman, because up to that point in time, nobody had flown at night or on the battlefield as we did, following him. And when he would come, the entire villages would turn out, and they'd see this expensive American machine, 4 lives on that aircraft coming in to rescue and to treat and to care for one of their wounded. So it had a tremendous impact on the hearts and minds of those people. And as I said, when I go back, they appreciate me very much, and I've heard the same from other American veterans who go back. Unfortunately, communism went out. We abandoned those poor people and the education camps. Assassinations and murders that took place after we left were just horrible. And, of course, the media never reported on that either. But I think communism pretty much dead over there. They just don't know what to do with the corpse. Eventually those people will emerge, and they're very productive people, and they're going to do great things.
Is that what leads to your subhead for this book? As you mentioned, communism ultimately took hold in Vietnam, yet after the title of Dead Men Flying, it's victory in Vietnam, which might raise some eyebrows. What did you mean by that?
By victory, I mean the humanitarian effort. That was a victory. And the other victory was the end of communism, the expansion of communism in the world. The GI never lost a battle over there. The battle was lost here at home. And communism, 10 years, it sapped them. And we have not seen since the Vietnam War an expansion of communism to any other country. At least that's what I've been told. So it was a victory in a humanitarian sense because we, as I said, we've never done that before. We've just gone in and bombed and strafed and destroyed. This time we didn't. We did humanitarian things in that country. It was unique in that aspect. And any time you do anything in a humanitarian way to care for people, that's a victory. And if you stop communism, that's another victory. So those are things when Americans see veterans. And by the way, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War, and this will go on for several years. We kicked it off here in San Antonio the other day, had a great turnout. People are trying to set the record straight. It's important not only for history, but it's important for the children, grandchildren, and other relatives of those who served, that they know that person was an honorable, noble soldier and not a war criminal, not a baby killer, but he was engaged in humanitarianism never seen before on the battlefield.
General, what's your reaction when you see the current generation of our troops engaging in that same type of humanitarian behavior, whether it's in Iraq or Afghanistan?
Yeah, and I think Vietnam kind of led the way. You never know what the next conflict's going to be. We can only be sure that we will be surprised. And so we have to build a force structure. Unfortunately, we don't have a force structure today that will support the incredible deployments. I see kids coming back from Iraq before and Afghanistan now that have been deployed 6 out of 10 years, and their PTSD rates are out of sight. Suicide is beyond their civilian cohort, something that's never happened before, because the leadership didn't build a force that could meet the commitment. And so these kids are as good as any soldiers we've ever fielded. They don't meet the combat, certainly not as intense as it was in Vietnam. Vietnam was more intense than World War II. But the stress, the separations, the constant deployments, the family issues are just horrible, very difficult on these kids. And so on Veterans Day, the people of America need to recognize the sacrifices and make sure that we take care of these kids, as we should any veteran.
In terms of building the force, it's obviously a volunteer force at this point, and we are using the reservists, which you mentioned were not used in Vietnam a generation or more ago. So what do you see as the most effective way of building that force without going back to the draft era?
Well, keep what you got, at least. Keep what you got. Don't cut. We've got sequestration coming up, which will take us back to the Stone Ages in military capability. And we will no longer be a player in world affairs. We'll have to lead from behind for sure. And the important thing, an important part of that is that the American military has been a force for peace across the world. Strength is the essence of peace. Strength is when people see strength, they back off. They see weakness, they'll attack. And so the American military in Germany and Japan and Korea and Kosovo across the world has been a force for peace. Now, a lot of these people can take care of themselves now, and I don't know how they see it or a lot of the intricacies, but we need to be strong enough to be a force for peace in the world as well as security here at home. So for God's sakes, you're going to take $1 trillion out of the force, reduce the Army and the Marine Corps to helplessness practically. So I don't see that the leadership today sees or recognizes or realizes the importance of a strong military.
General, we'll leave it there, but we thank you very much for your thoughts on today's challenges for the military. We thank you for telling the story of dust off from the Vietnam era and the humanitarian mission then. And above all else, we thank you so much for your service and sacrifice to this country over decades and a very distinguished service at that.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed being with you.
Thank you, sir, very much. Retired U.S. Army Major General Patrick Brady served over 34 years in the U.S. Army. He's a recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor, the Distinguished Service Cross, as well as countless other military honors. His book is Dead Men Flying, Victory in Vietnam, The Legend of Dust Off, America's Battlefield Angels. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.